Welcome back. This is Sight to the Blind. Let's have a little fun at the beginning of this show. I haven't talked about numbers in a while, and I won't go too deep for you because I know some of you get cross-eyed every time I start talking about gematria and all that. But let's go over a couple of current events that's going on right now. This whole Kate Middleton thing. Now, you should know it's a ritual or a psyop, but whatever it is, they want you to care about this woman, which you shouldn't care about this woman. But it's in your face, and you see it on your timeline, or you see it on television, and it's like you can't dodge it because they're always keeping you updated. They went through the whole fake photo, which I think they knew that people knew was going to be a fake photo because they retracted it too fast. Then they try to cut. It makes no sense. Okay, if she has cancer. Okay, if she's dead. No one cares. They want us to care, but no one should care. So they go through this perpetual ritual of show and tell, reveal and hide. So everything is a secret. So that it keeps you wondering what's really going on over there. Why all the royals? Da, 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 da. It could be they're hiding in their bunkers, but who knows? But why would they need to hide? It would make sense to me that they would hide at the last minute rather than already be hiding and be down there for what, a year or two, and then something happens. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't care. But I'm just, it's good for you to understand the markers of how things go so you know that everything is tied up into something. And the best way I can really describe it for you or explain it to you is through numbers, because that's what they do. Everything with them is a numeric timeline. It is not disturbed. Just like the Most High's numeric timeline is not disturbed with the date of his Mashiach returns. I promise you that date and that time is not disturbed. When Yahuwah shakes the heavens and shakes the earth, I guarantee you that time is not moved. Our second Exodus, I guarantee you that time is not moved. The separation of the wheat and tare, and when the scythe comes down, I guarantee you that time does not move. So in their little timeline, it's just a different variation of mathematical equations that you could see and say, okay, I know, I understand why they did this. Sometimes they move them, sometimes they don't. But I just thought it was funny and interesting that Kate Middleton was born January 9th, 1982. Now you take her birthday all the way to her little announcement of cancer, which is March 22nd, 2024. It's been 506 months, 1 week, and 6 days. Why that is significant? 5 + 6 = 11. The 1 week stays the same and the 6 days stay the same. Now, if you flip these numbers upside down, you would get 9, 11, and 1. So if you remember the terrorist attack in World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, it's the same thing. It's 9, 11, 01 if you drop the O. Her name, I think Princess Catherine or whatever that I typed in, it's the same thing. It's 1119. If you add up the birthday numbers, 1919, 82, if you add those numbers up individually, it's 111. She was born on the 9th day. That's still 1119 or 9111. It's the same thing. So it's basically like low-level magic, if you can understand basic math. It's low-level magic. But they're telling you something's going to happen. Something has to happen very soon here. They just passed a $1.some trillion spending bill to keep the government open. Money that we do not have. But they're doing it in hopes to ease the tensions until the next president. And they're going to throw it all on his lap. And because of the brainwashing and mental stupidity in this country, people are going to blame the new president for something that they have been starting for the last 4 years by continually to keep passing and writing checks, keep creating money. And so when it gets on the guy that you don't like, that is when chaos is going to erupt. And that's the reason why they give you these numbers. They don't tell you this is what they're going to do. They kind of soft tell you through numbers. They kind of blame you for not being smart enough to have the wisdom and understanding to know what they do. It's like, we giving you the tools to know our communications. You don't want to do it. So it's your fault. It's not our fault. We tell you what we're going to do. We may hide it, but we tell you what we're going to do, and we tell you how we do it. It's on you for not paying attention. Now, mind you, if those who have the Ruach HaKodesh don't really need number, I mean, I have it, but I have to teach it. I don't have to use it in anything, but it's good for you to understand the basis of it. But those who have the Ruach HaKodesh and who have different gifts in the spirit, you don't need to know math, because the Most High tells you when to move, when to duck, when to go left, when to go right. That's the beauty of it. But for me, I need to know. I need to know deeper. Some of us just have that nature of, we have to get to the bottom of everything. We have to see what it really is. And sometimes I use these tools for my own benefit, because it eases and comforts me sometimes when I'm distressed. So if I didn't know numbers and I just saw all these events happening, I would think, well, oh, something's about to happen. Naturally, I would say, oh, it's about to happen. But if by going through these numbers, I'd be like, okay, it's not going to happen yet. Oh, it's going to happen soon. Oh, I'll give it about 2 or 3 years. I can prepare myself, and I know ahead of time. That's literally all that is. Let's go to the 6 police officers in Braxton, Mississippi. This has been on the news. I don't know why. I mean, they already had the trial. They already got sentenced. They're getting ready to go to jail. Why is this now a big thing? Especially when this happened, what, 2022? This happened a while ago. So why are they bringing this to the forefront now? Especially when I told you in the last episode, March is their biggest ritual month, because there's so many combinations of 322, 33, and 3s. They love it. So that's why you're being bombarded with all these type of news stories. But the one thing that stood out to me is not just because it's 6 police officers. You should have known that. But it's the names of these police officers that's throwing me off. And it makes me seem like they just made these people up. Because if you look at these 6 white guys, if you got them to shave their hair off or change something about their facial hair, if they walk past you, you would not know that this was these police officers. I guarantee you wouldn't know. No one would point out that, hey, you one of the 6 cops from Braxton, Mississippi that tortured 2 black men. I guarantee you, if you walk right past them right after this trial, you guys wouldn't recognize them. I mean, they have very generic, bland white people faces. And their names are even more generic. Generic, like, you know, back in the day you play EA Sports Madden, and this is before you could just make up your team. Remember they had the Rhinos, and they had some other team name, but it was just a generic team, and you could just play against this generic team as practice, and they had generic names. This is what this is basically. If you look at the names, this is what they sound like. One of them was named Hunter Elward. Elward. If you look at the spelling of that, it don't seem right. But you think Elward, as in lesbian. Follow me on this. Let's go to Christian Dedman. I have never heard of a Christian Dedman, not even spelled that way. I've heard of Desmond, but Christian Dedman, D-E-D-M-O-N, almost like demon, Christian demon, but it's Dedman. Brett McAlpin, M-C-A-L-P-I-N. This is an unusual, the groups of names are very unusually spelled. Jeffrey Middleton, that's not a big thing. Daniel Opdyke. O-P-D-Y-K-E. Elward and Opdyke. And then Joshua Hartfield, which is, that's a basic name. But if you saw these men in the streets after this trial, thinking that they were in prison, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't think it was any of them. And then they called themselves the Goon Squad. All I did was look that up in numerology. And it's 33 in septenary cipher. Septenary is only just the alphabet, but the numbers count repeatedly up to 7. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, and it goes all the way through the alphabet, and it was 33. That's what goon squad means. So if seven being the seventh letter of the alphabet, which is G, and G is for Freemason, you should know. And then even the story about them two black men being tortured. Now, I'm not saying that this doesn't happen. And I'm not demeaning or trying to lowball experiences in the black community with police brutality. But it just seemed too much. They were tortured. First of all, they did a home invasion on these two brothers that happened to be with each other, which is odd. Tortured them. They took sex toys and sexually abused them. That seems a lot. It's almost like rape. Then they waterboarded them. Fam, who has time to do this? They pick a random house with two black people in it. And then they had the dildos, or I'm assuming they had dildos. They had sex toys already prepared. No one heard any commotions. No one, like, the story seems insane to me that out of the blue this would happen. But there's a reason for why they bringing this up. Their lawyer, the two black guys' lawyer, his name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. He was kicked out of the Nation of Islam. And now is the new leader of the Black Panther Party, or the new Black Panther Party. Fam, you can't write a better script than this. Now, why are they making this such a big deal? They're going away for either life or for 60 or 40 some years. But what if they appealed? What if they found something in the case that would allow them to get pardoned or have their sentences commuted? That would cause an ultimate uproar. Say if Donald Trump came back to into presidency and he allowed whatever Mississippi governor or Mississippi politician who was Republican, what if Donald Trump told him, hey, they spent enough time in jail, commute their sentence and let them out for torturing two black men? Do you understand? Y'all wouldn't even need Black Lives Matter to resurrect itself to tear up something. If they really truly wanted to do order out of chaos, that would be a beautiful recipe for chaos. Donald Trump excusing or pardoning with a Mississippi governor, a Republican governor, letting him commute the sentences of six police officers that tortured a black man. And then tortured him in such a way that the reason why they tell you these particular crimes that happened that night, and so they have to bring it back up. So then it would enrage the black community or black America. I'm not saying this would happen, but I'm saying this is a nice little recipe if they truly wanted order out of chaos to get the black community in a stir up. Because you need us to kind of force chaos. I don't see it working with any other presidential candidate. Joe Biden right now is... people believe Joe Biden is just screwing up the economy, writing checks and all that. Still, black people are not in an uproar. Even when they're now talking about, oh, we're going to vote for Trump. And when they get there, now it's going to be another race-baiting presidency for 4 years to get you to show chaos. That's how I see it. I don't think they just bringing up these men for no reason. I truly don't. Just like what happened to George Floyd, how the police officer that was kneeling on his head had a badge, and the Asian guy, if you look at the pictures, he didn't even have a badge. His badge was stitched on. He had a stitched on badge as if it was a costume uniform. Go look it up. But this is what they do to the black community. You have to incite racial trauma. And this is a perfect recipe for racial trauma in order for people to act out. That's how I see it. Now, let's get into... Oh, let me go back one more. This whole thing with Russia. As I told you before in the last episode, this is exactly what they do. It's March 22nd. It's 3-2-2, skull and bones. When they started out, it was 40 victims. The granddaddy clock and all of the initiates or the classmen of bonesmen, that granddaddy clock that stays in every picture, it stays at 8 o'clock. The shorthand would be on the 40. That is why they started out with 40 deaths. Now it gotten up to 133. Why do you think it got up to 133? The Russian Masonic Lodge is literally not that far from where this theater was. I looked up the band that was there, Picnic. I looked at some of their album covers. They got pyramids on it. Why would a Russian rock band, or a progressive Russian rock band, need to have multiple album covers with pyramids on them? Freemasons. That's, they need their people in that spot. Now everybody know who Picnic is. I mean, I listen to some of their music. It's literally like Russian Dave Matthews Band. That's what it sounded like to me. It sounded like, yeah, like Ben Folds 5, if you could picture that in Russian. That's what it sounds like. Like very like soft, progressive, alternative rock. Back in the 90s. That's what it sounds like. So it's... And then they blame it on ISIS. So them saying ISIS, then they said, oh, now it's ISIS-K. Fam, what different do it matter? When do we start adding letters to stuff? It's like you adding letters to the LGBTQIA, then now they adding letters to ISIS. This is how really remedial these people do not have any type of creativity when they do their things. They cannot deviate from what the program or what the predictive programming already is. If you know about Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS, Hamas, that's it. It ain't gonna be no different other variations of terrorist organization. They're not gonna bring up a terrorist organization. Like, you would imagine it will never be like Cobra. Like, you just seen Cobra coming out. You wouldn't believe it. They couldn't use it. They can't change from what they already started. So anything from Al-Qaeda, Taliban, and ISIS, you can get the same things controlled by the same government, the same operatives, which is the CIA, Mossad, and MI6. Because I can't imagine any of those Taliban or ISIS people having the funding to go into another country, a desert people, going into a winter country, a cold country, and be able just to walk up into a music theater on 322 to start shooting and rattling off shots. 5 or 7 people. They say. But it doesn't make any sense. They need extra help. With all that chatter going back and forth, especially this war, you would think they would have the communications open so they would know who would come into their country. But the thing is, why would ISIS be targeting Russia all of a sudden? Why? It makes no sense. They have never beefed with them. What beef does ISIS have with Russia? Don't ISIS hate America? Does not Russia is supposed to hate America? So why would ISIS go and do that? It makes no sense to me. It ain't like Russia is helping out Israel. My man Putin just got reelected. So why all of a sudden after his election, all of a sudden ISIS would pop up? They run fool's errand. It's just laughable because a lot of people fall for it. A lot of people feel sorry, but then you know what is really sorry? Is the people who are trapped and get killed in these psyops. So you would have to think the Most High is not protecting everybody. If you are not coming to him, he is not coming to you, except if you are one of his children. And if he's pinpointed you and selected you, wherever you are in your walk, whether you don't know it or you know it, wherever you are, that's when he pulled you out. He's not pulling everybody out. So a lot of you want me to talk about vices, alcoholism, masturbation, and all the types of foolishness that you can't let go of. You have to understand he's not awakening everybody. So there's really no point for you to sulk in your vices or your victimhood of your vices. It's time to see the bigger picture. Now, one of those bigger pictures is something I'm in between on right now. I have to wait and see. And that's really all this is. When it comes to prophecy and signs, it's about waiting to see what's going to happen. Instead of, like I did before and got caught, as trying to predict something's going to happen and didn't happen and I look stupid. I've done that before, which means I'm not doing it again. But I understand with this eclipse that's coming up, a lot of brothers are already garnishing followers and views and likes because they have now found out that the eclipse path forms the Aleph and Tav symbol. And I do understand that the symbols, one of them represent 400. I understand that. And we talk about the 400-year curse and the signs. But the 400 years been over in 2019. Why are we getting signs 5 or 6 years later? Now, I'm not discounting the fact that the path creates these symbols. They're Paleo-Hebrew. I'm not discounting that. But I'm trying to figure out what the sign truly means. And some brothers are already talking about the Messiah coming back. We're about to return everything because they're looking at the path and the path is crossing over towns that say like Little Egypt and Nineveh. They're getting ahead of themselves and trying to stir up people to think that Yahushua is going to come back literally in the next 2 or 3 years. And they even try to use Matthew 24:27-30 to clarify this. It says, "For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Adam be," which means you will be able to see Yahushua regardless of where you're at. It won't be just in the east. It won't be just in the west. You'll be able to see him. Everybody will be able to see. "For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the son of Adam in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Adam coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." I'll go for one more. "And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a shofar, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other." Now, this eclipse, I don't believe is the sign that we're looking for. Because what? It says immediately after the tribulation of those days. We are not in any period of tribulation yet. I think we're on the verge of it, but I don't think we're at tribulation. If Donald Trump comes back, I say that's when it would kind of start. Because it would have to happen somewhere close to or a little bit before Agenda 2030. I think the real occultists who understand demonology know that they get their little secrets from Satan. Satan kind of knows when to kick things off, or the Most High telling Satan, yo, kick it off. It has to be in that time frame. I don't think we're at tribulation right now. Things aren't really truly turbulent for us. I think when the economy collapses, I think that would be the marker. And I think that's when you see Jacob Rothschild, all these royal families and people are dying and getting cancer and kind of seem like they're shuffling around to go hide. I think they're preparing for that. They have to know something's going to happen, but they don't know the full picture. They just know, okay, it's time for us to hide our money or to get rid of assets so we're not hit with the losses. That's why I think when Donald Trump, they're like, oh, he created, Monday. If he doesn't come up with this money, he's going to lose his assets. And I think it would be smart for him to lose his assets for a time, because if they really wanted to hit New York, he wouldn't be held at a loss, which Freemasons don't take a loss. They may show you that they're losing, but they never take a loss. They find the loopholes in everything they do. Like I said before, Satan is the best lawyer for Freemasons, because there's always loopholes. And the only way you know these loopholes is if you're ultra rich or if you have access to money, property, land. You could find ways to finagle. I mean, look at what happened to the Native Americans. Finagled. They got Armstronged. They got monkey stronged off their land, off of treaties they signed with the colonists, and just never upheld them. So trust me, they know what they're doing. They might not see the full picture, but they know some of the picture to know when things start to kick off. So, yes, it could be confusing to see the sun be darkened and the moon shall not give her light. But the stars should have to fall from heaven for this scripture to be accurate. "Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Adam in heaven, then he should what? Blow the shofar. It should be a shofar. And those 4 days of darkness or somewhere close after that, we should hear a shofar. But like I said before, we aren't close to tribulation yet, I don't believe. And I think a lot of brothers are pushing this now because it's gaining traction. So now we're going to get all the way through, all the way to April. And then we'll get this little eclipse and there'll be some Masonic foolishness that goes on. And then after that, that's what? We haven't even seen the Antichrist. He hasn't even popped on stage yet. I would think it would make sense to start the tribulation and the Antichrist be revealed after we see another president or maybe the last president. Then you see things heat up a little bit more in the Middle East because right now they're not really heating up. Like this is Israel still trying to get the people out of Gaza. They're still trying to completely ethnic cleanse Israel. I would give them at least maybe 2.5 more years until they can completely eradicate the Palestinians off their land. I give them 2.5 years. They need to get it done quickly before Agenda 2030, I know that. Because then they want to introduce the Antichrist. Antichrist has to be on stage through turmoil and tribulation. I don't think we're there yet. So I don't know why people are putting so much emphasis on this coming eclipse. Even mainstream media is going ham with the eclipse, telling you what kind of glasses you should have, when to see it, how you should see it, what state you need to be on to fully see it. They want you to pay attention to it, but you know it could easily turn the lights off. They go like, oh, this eclipse from the solar flares have interrupted our power grid and the lights can't come back on. They need to start testing what you people are going to do when the lights go out. They haven't seen it yet. They've seen it maybe one time in New York. What was it, 2003? When there was a complete blackout in New York or in New York and upper almost close to Canada. They need to see what you want to do. Now they need to see what you want to do because 20 years ago, y'all were a different type of animal. People were a different type of breed 20 years ago. I think now they're almost ready because of they've been predictive programming you with movies that they're ready for this whole eclipse to make a ritual out of it. And I don't think it's a ritual for us to be paying attention to. I think it's us for a sign to see, okay, this is what's going to start happening. I think they know that the Most High's new moon and new moon festival is coming up on a Monday. Because they would not have all these little rituals popping off, getting all the way up to the end of Monday. And knowing that before, like it'll be eight or 7 days before that, then Easter happens. I'm just telling you, they're doing a lot. There's a lot going on down here in Florida, too. They have a concert, a game, Moultrie Music Festival, and spring break. And these things going back to back to back. But I think something, if the energy they are harvesting the energy. And I think they're going to end it with Easter. Something has to happen on Easter where they mock Yahushua because believers are too ignorant to understand that we're on a Gregorian calendar that has nothing to do with resurrection, the real resurrection. So I don't know why they keep mapping it out every year, changing it based on leap day, leap years, and say, okay, this is where he was resurrected at. And people follow it, which I don't understand why people can't follow the Most High's calendar and new moon festivals. It's fairly easy to follow his new moon festivals. Now that I understand it and how it's calculated, now I can tell you. Before, it was like 1 or 2 years I had to wait just to see in the equinox how it all relates. But if you take the equinox, okay, you go the day after that, you search out, after the equinox, where is the full moon? Because if the moon and the sun was made on the fourth day, then you look at the full moon of the fourth day. That's creation. Now you go 5, 6, 7, the day he rested. So the day he rested on 7 is a Wednesday in our calendar. The fourth day is the Monday where the moon shines bright full. That's the new moon. That's the first day. So we have the day of creation up to the fourth day, which is the new moon where the moon was created. That's noon. Then it's 5, 6, 7, the day he rested. But you go back to the new moon. That's the new moon festival. Then after that is the day, the first day. Then you, from the first day after the New Moon Festival, you count 14 days and it gets you to Passover. Now, that's all you need to calculate the rest of the year. So if you know, if you read Jubilees and Enoch, you know everything is sectioned off 30 days with the 4 days with the seasons. So if you go to a calendar and this, or you go to a blank calendar, cross off the dates, cross off the names of March, April, cross all that off and just write the first month. Then you take that and you just, you count 14 days, boom, this is where Passover is. Then you count the Shabbats. Then you go through every part of the calendar up to 30 days and knowing when the seasons change. And that's the only way you can know is if you read Jubilees and the Book of Enoch. Yeah, I mean a little bit of Book of Jasher. But read those three books and it'll tell you when the seasons change. So you know when to go 31. And it tells you in Jubilees, the first month, the fourth, the seventh, the tenth, these are the days of the season. Seasons, this is the days of remembrance because this is when the Noah made the ark. This is when the flood happened. This is when the water went into the abyss. This is when the ark landed and this is when it walked out of the ark. It's all told for you in the first few books of Jubilees. So they tell you when the seasons are. They tell you with the month and all you got to do is go 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 4 month. Get January, February, March, and April out of your mind. Do 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 4 month, and that is how you can help yourself perfect the calendar. Very, very easy. Now that I understand it now, I ask for understanding. I ask for knowledge and wisdom on this. I was even corrected on an issue because I believed that the Most High in Jubilees said, all right, these are the remembrance of the New Moon festivals was just only those four set apart new moons, which are the seasons. And actually, every new moon is a festival, and every new moon is like a Shabbat. So if you can participate, every full moon, which goes from month to month, is a Shabbat. I didn't know that. It didn't make sense of why every Shabbat will be every new moon festival will be a Shabbat. I thought if you want to do a day of remembrance, it would be the seasons because he says the first month and so forth and so on. But now that I read Amos, it says, and if you go to the Sefer and you type in the Sefer, new moon and Shabbat, you see how closely related new moons and Shabbats are. They pair them up. One verse says, I think I know what I'm talking about in Amos off the top of my head. Says, when will the new moon be over that we may sell? When will the Shabbat be over that we may lay forth something to sell? And of course, it says that we can defraud by measures. And I don't know what Israelites were doing, trying to be shady with their own people, but so forth, so whatever. But it starts off saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell? And when will the Shabbat be over that we may lay forth? So it tells me they could never buy or sell on the new moon. So every new moon, it didn't just single it out. So every new moon is a Shabbat. Now, it's on you and your calendar of what you can do. Now, if you have to work on those days, he's understanding. I don't know why people think that when soon as we see or discover laws, statutes, commandments, that if we don't get them right the first time, that we should give up. He understands that we were in this world longer than we were under his covenant. Some of us went through this world up to 30 some years living in the world, living in religion. And now we're trying to do a hard reset to go into his calendar, go into his statutes and commandments. Yes, it's a learning process. It's a purging process. It's always getting you to not think yourself so haughty and high-minded and self-righteous because you're always going to be pointed out things that you were doing wrong. So every year I try to do one of the feast days perfect. Yes, sometimes I fall. Sometimes I forget. Or sometimes I didn't do the right thing. I remember when I started off in Passover. I didn't know you're not supposed to eat leavened bread. My butt went to a Passover event in Tampa and went right down to my boy's pizza spot and got a pizza and just ate it. And then drank beer. So I'm doing leavened yeast with beer and leavened pizza. And my stomach was bubbling. I was like, man, my stomach hurt. That's the Most High telling me, yo, you're not supposed to be eating this. And then when I got back home from Tampa, I got a six-pack of Corona during Passover and started drinking. I was like, man, why is my stomach hurting? And then after a couple of days, right after Passover was over, then I read like beer had, you can't be drinking beer, you can't be having bread or even bread in the house, even leavened bread in the house. So I was like, God damn, I got to do better. So the next year I did it the right way. I had me and my woman, we did matzah. We did it the right way. We had lamb. I didn't do any beer. I had wine. Like, so it, you change, you get better. That's the whole point. To not make you think that you are completely right all the time. You strive forward. There's beauty in it because you feel yourself progressing. And you know when these days starting to come up because you get excited of, all right, I got to make sure that I'm perfect this time. I want to show the Most High that I really care about his feast days. And that's all he wants to see. He doesn't want to watch you look at this information, understand his calendar, understand his feast days, and then try to mingle it with Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, Palm Sunday, Lent, Thanksgiving. He just don't. Birthday parties. He don't want to see that. He wants to see you come out of this world. He wants to see you make an effort to come out of his world, because detaching yourself from worldly pleasures, you detach yourself from the judgment of Babylon. When the truth sets you free, which means you detach yourself from the shackles and yokes of this world, its materialism and its pagan holidays and its foolishness. You detach yourself from all of its customs so you don't get judgment that sure enough is going to come. I wish people would read the books of Baruch, because he is adamant about cutting off a grace period. And a lot of people think they are going to be saved by grace. That's all that's needed, that the Most High is going to cover you if you're saved by grace. Oh, Paul said you're saved by grace. The Most High didn't save Paul from the infirmity in his flesh, because he said, my grace shows when you are weak. My grace is my strength is shown when you are weak. So me giving you grace is for you to live on with this infirmity in your side, in your flesh, while you do what I tell you to do, which is stay in these commandments, preach the Torah, preach obedience, and preach my son. He don't say I'm giving you grace to go run around and do what you want. I don't give you grace so you can entertain the pleasures of your flesh. He made Paul weak because Paul was too heavy-handed. I think Paul was heavy-handed when it came to law. So if Paul had full strength, I think the Most High could see Paul doing exactly or having a trial of falling back into reprimanding those who didn't listen. So if you got that thing in your flesh, you're not ready to pop off and swing on anybody. I think Paul back then he was in charge of killing a martyr or killing a person. So if he's abusing the call-out assembly, Paul's out there laying hands on folk. So it seemed to me Paul got a temper. If you go to I think it's Corinthians, where he says, I may be rude in speech, which means Paul pop off. And he backs it up with putting hands on you. So if the Most High humbled him through his flesh, that means he's weak. He can't pop off because Paul will mess around and get his butt whipped. So that's why the Most High says, I'm giving you grace. I'm showing you grace by allowing you to live through this infirmity for my strength. So everybody can see that I'm in you and not you going by your own hand. If you go to Judges 7, and if you read about Gideon, how he was supposed to go to war with the Midianites, and a group of an army of Israelites was ready to go to war, Yahuwah told Gideon, like, that's too many people for you. I don't want them to go battle with the Midianites because they're going to think that they saved themselves by their own hand. So I want you to go down to this river or lake, and then I'm going to select for you 300 men instead of the thousands that were going to go with you. Then I'll give the Midianites into your hand so you know that because you are small, because you are weak, that I triumphed for you. That's the whole thing with me when it comes to grace, is to be able to show the Most High his strength when we come amongst our enemies, when we are weak around our enemies or weak around our vices, weak around our infirmities, that he shows his strength. Now, if we are in our full strength doing these commandments and all that, We will act like people do today, acting like, oh, I don't need the Most High. I don't need to get on my knees in prayer and ask him for things. And that's what the Most High wants. He wants to bless you by you falling on your knees in your weakness, asking him for help. That's when you being weak. If you're in your strength and everything is all calm, cool, and collected, you feel after a while, because you know the imaginations of men, you feel like you don't need the Most High. When everything is going right, it feels like you don't need the Most High. When you're in your blessings, you're good. You feel like you don't need the Most High. After you get over your little vices or over your little infirmities, over your little victimhood, you start feeling like, I don't need the Most High now. And then he have to humble you. If he loves you and care for you, he'll humble you. Because eventually you get high-minded. Eventually your mouth keeps running to a little bit too close to wickedness, and then he got to correct you. But that's, to me, that's the reason of grace, why he gives us grace, because he knows where we fall. He knows what our weaknesses are. So if we in our weakness aren't high-minded and say, oh, Heavenly Father, Yahuwah, I'm so weak today. Oh, Heavenly Father, you know my flesh is weak on this topic or this subject. Oh, Heavenly Father, you know I don't have the patience. I'm weak with patience. I'm weak with being compassionate. I'm just weak. Give me strength. That's when he's like, all right, I got you. I'll uphold you. I'll hold you up. If you search the scriptures, he says multiple times, I will hold you up. I will uphold you with my right hand. I will carry you. I will lift you up. I will exalt you. That's how everybody sees the sanctification of us, especially Yasharel. When I post in the video about keeping the laws, statutes, and commandments, even though you're weak following these laws, statutes, and commandments, that's when you still see the Most High strength, because he knows that you're trying. Because his Torah endures forever. Now, I posted a video on Sight to the Blind, which tells you and shows you the scriptures that he says over and over, that there are no limit of days when it comes to this Torah. That this Torah is forever, that it endures forever. But the covenant that he made with Yasharel, mentioned in Ezekiel chapter 37 and 36, he says, I'm going to sanctify you in the eyes of the heathen. I'm going to sanctify you, not for your own pleasures, not for your own works, not for your own righteousness, but because of my name. Since Most High put his name on us, he can't let us fail. Because it makes Satan win. The Most High wants to exalt you in such a way that it shames your enemy. It shames Satan. Look who I picked. Look at the dirt that he's been doing. Watch how I exalt him. You think Satan doesn't do the same programming? You don't think Satan does the same thing with his minions? That's why he picks Tom Brady, the sixth round draft pick, and make him a Super Bowl champion. That's his way of doing it. Taking an unknown person, taking a lot of these fatherless children, making them rappers and making them celebrities, taking a Cardi B from a stripper, a low frequency person, and making them look like angels of righteousness. That's what he does. Satan gets everything from the Most High. But the Most High does it in a very methodical, meticulous, natural, beautiful way. So you don't turn back. You purge yourself when he turns you over with blessings. It's so easy to act satanic these days. It really is. It's easy to act satanic. It's hard to get into these blessings and get into Torah because you're constantly purging your flesh. When you think you let go of one demon, four more jump on you. When you think you beat this vice, four vices come at you. When you think you're done with this relationship, four relationships come at you. When you think you're done with this man or woman, another man or woman comes at you. It's a constant thing because you are now perfecting your light. And when you are perfecting your light, people around you are going to try to darken it. People are not out trying to darken people already walking in darkness. When you shine too bright spiritually that you don't see the aura around you, when you start shining, people are trying to dim it because you're too bright. It ain't like they can put shades on it and ignore you and walk away from you. No, they have to send shots at you. They got to take aim at you. They got to cover you. They got to bring out an umbrella to shade you from how bright you are. But battling it that way makes you weak from time to time. And when you're weak from time to time, you go to Yahuwah. Please strengthen me, Father. I can't do it today. He does this so when the enemy thinks you're done, you're tired, you're exhausted, you can't do it no more. Because like I said before in previous episodes, demons around you stare at you. They laugh like, oh, we almost got him. We almost got him. But when they see you go into your prayer closet and start praying for strength and praying for you to be uplifted, exalted, blessings, they'll be like, oh, I hope he don't hear. I hope he don't hear. I hope his prayer doesn't pierce the clouds. And when the Most High sees this and uplifts you and exalts you in the presence of your enemies, that puts Satan to shame. That annoys them. That irritates them. Whatever chief, prince, master, king, demon that's in this low-level realm or whatever realm of demons that you are battling, because I'm telling you, the more righteous you are, the more you're in that Torah, you start beating low-level demons and you go up to chief demons and you get almost higher. You won't get to Satan, but you'll get high enough where you really need fasting, prayer to battle certain enemies or certain strongholds, certain principalities. But that only comes when you are prepared. So some of you are still starting out as babes in the spirit. You're dealing with little tiny demons. You're dealing with weak demons. Those that jump on your flesh for whenever you get upset or get mad, and they fall off when you come to. Or when you fast, four or five demons, you know, fall off you, and then you can see clearly and you can continue in your walk. But the more you are righteous, the more you in this Torah, you face different type of principalities, because you know you already beaten certain principalities in the lower level of this realm. So they need somebody big enough to darken your light. But the Most High wants to exalt you. He wants to bless you, because that's when people see, like, oh, he's got to be blessed. He's different from everybody else. She's different from everybody else. What is it? Because when people see that light and see the Most High is blessing you, and the enemies see you be blessed, that attracts people to your walk. That's why I don't stress being in a community. That's why I don't stress go looking for a group. That's why I stress don't be following these camps. Because you're going to be gravitating to people who are like-minded, and you're going to find the right people that fit the right pieces of your walk so you all can grow together. But first, you need to learn how to beat these low-level demons. You need to learn how to beat these principalities first. And the way you beat them is through the grace of fighting through your flesh into your spirit or into whatever infirmity you have, and then calling on the Most High to save you, calling on the Most High to help you, calling on Yahushua HaMashiach to give you some of that power that he had when he was getting persecuted. By doing so, you shame your enemies. You shame the devil. That's the whole point of grace for me. That even though some of us may slip and fall, if drinking is your thing and you somehow, through whatever situation that happens, say your parents die or a relative die, or you break up with somebody, and it just caused a trigger in you where you got to go back to alcohol, and you do it for one night. I'm telling you, most of you are going to do it. Most of you are going to leave a vice, and then something traumatic is going to happen. Like I said, the principalities, once you start graduating in demons, one of them are going to really affect you. One principality is going to affect your partner or something, or a situation is going to happen, and you're going to break up, and you're going to automatically get something on your flesh. Now drink, and you're going to run to a bar, get drunk one night, and you'll be like, I feel completely horrible. I feel completely shamed that I backtracked. And then you fight harder. Then you fast harder. Then you pray harder, because that now you are in your weakness. Now you know when you're wrong. So then the Most High is like, all right, give him this spirit. I'm going to walk with him. I'm going to strengthen him so he knows when to look out for this now new principality that he did not see coming. Now he's in a stronger level of principalities. Now I'm going to show him and strengthen him how to deal with this now. Now I'm going to show him what partner he should pick. Now I'm going to show him what places he can't go. Now I'm going to show you what he can't drink. I'm going to show him this. And this happens when you're in your weakness. And then you become strong again. And then you're ready to battle a much harder principality. And I'm telling you, I've gone through it. When I talk to you about in my relationship, when I said before, anytime I go somewhere, a vacation with her, or come back from a vacation with her, there's always a principality that stirs up an agitation. It never fails. But now I've known this. I can pinpoint this agitation. I know when to separate myself. I know when to pray and ask for the Most High for help. And before I asked the Most High for help, I was in my, you know, in my righteousness. I feel I got this. I don't need no help right now. But because I've graduated in principalities coming after me, now I feel like, okay, now I really have to go to work. Now they're trying to step up their game on me. Now they're giving me visions and dreams that make me agitated, that cause jealousy amongst my friends when it comes to my woman. Now I need to know how to battle the different way. Now I need to know how to see it. Now I need to know how to be compassionate with my woman because she is not a part of what I'm going through. So once I do this, now it don't happen. Now it, like, certain things happen, like, of course, the flight getting messed up and her dog ended up dying. She ended up losing her dog as soon as we came back from there. So it was like a pile of things happening. But we stood strong. We stood steadfast. Still praying. When we were weak, I didn't know how I was going to handle it. But now the communication between us doesn't happen as far as the arguments or the agitation. Now it kind of went away. It kind of softened and leveled itself out. Now I know when it kind of tries to rear its head, but it's easily taken care of because I start praying. So now that's the whole part of grace. That's the whole part of being weak in your flesh sometimes, because you need to build yourself up. That's the whole part of him sanctifying his children in front of your enemies. And it's even enemies that you don't see. It's enemies that you don't see beyond this veil. You don't know how many entities or principalities from your bloodline sit up there foaming at the mouth or upset and mad, because that's what they are. They're upset and mad, parched, dry, thirsty. And the only way they can feed is they feed on your emotions. They feed when blood is spilled on the ground. So they're going to be around you waiting for you to fall. And if the lower levels can't get you, they'll bring in somebody else more powerful than them to get you. And when they can't get you, it just, you start climbing all the way up to the ladder where you can't be touched. Your hedge can't be breached. And that's the whole point, is us building up a hedge where it can't be breached. So that's why we need to separate from society, separate from this world, separate from our flesh, do these commandments and feast days. So then we have no excuse. We will have no excuse to stay on path. Because within that, we create a hedge that cannot be penetrated. And so you better start looking at the chinks in your armor, or the chinks in your hedge, or the chinks in your family, whoever's in your household, so they don't bring any of these type of principalities in. Because it's not the person you were dealing with. It's the principalities that seep through. And it's a battle. The toughest battle we ever have to go through is the battle with our loved ones. That's the toughest battle. When Yahushua said the man's enemies will be of his own household, he was not playing. But it's a way to do it. When you understand you are not fighting a person, you're fighting a principality, you're fighting an entity that you don't see, that somehow seeped in to the hedge or seeped in to try you, to see what you would do, to disrupt your own hedge. Most of these little entities come in just to see if you're going to burn up your own house. Because that's what they like. They love when people self-destruct. They love to see self-destruction. They don't want to be really the causes of your pain and suffering. They want to watch you do it yourself, so you can join them on their side. Like I said, they wait for you to darken your light. So being weak is not necessarily a bad thing. It truly isn't. It's a way that you feel yourself needing to be stronger in an area that you are weak in. I'll see y'all next week.